powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Bump and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacy Rost.
Here we go now.
The Mariners hang with the best in the postseason. Let's figure it out with Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. And Ryan, if I were you, I would feel like I was looking over my shoulder constantly to see if I was going to be on the broadcast just trying to enjoy a nice bowl of ice cream. Like, that's exhausting.
You know, there are going to be repercussions. I've been on that broadcast a couple of times now. The last time they had me, they thought they were making fun of me because I have blue light glasses. I had the big headphones on, and like literally, I was arguing with I think my mom over text message while they're filming me. And then yesterday, I'm feeding my face with the new soft serve ice cream machine that they have in the press box. Mixed with vanilla, mixed with some crushed up Oreos, my own version of a Blizzard.
Of course.
And the camera truly adds 15 pounds, apparently.
Now, Ryan, I do not condone the harassment that's happening to you, but do you ever think maybe you're doing it, you're bringing it on yourself a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I used to refer to Root as replays only on touchdowns. That's what Root stood for, is replays only on touchdowns. And I do mock Goldsmith a lot. I have some repercussions that are coming for him. Some Photoshop pictures of what he would look like bald and with a mohawk that will on the big board. And I'll get my revenge. I mean, okay. I think, you know, I'm born and raised in Montana. Like, they base Yellowstone off of some of that stuff, and I'm like, rip, I'll get my revenge.
Do you, Ryan? You just do you. Forget the haters, man. Yep. My question for you is, Service said this is a good baseball team. Stacy asked me, what is a good baseball team? And I gave my answer, but I want to hear what your answer is.
Yeah, I think for me, a good baseball team is a team that can win in a variety of ways without losing in a variety of ways. And I think that's what makes the Mariners a good baseball team. They're not, you know, lately they've been reliant on the home run, but they get on base enough that they're pretty effective. And then they don't make a lot of mistakes in the field. And then when you pitch, and that's the same thing with their pitching, they don't walk a ton of guys. You don't see them walking the leadoff guy very often. Those kinds of things. It's like, you know, players always talk about, let's play clean baseball. The Mariners, for the most part, play pretty clean baseball. They don't make like a lot of stupid mistakes on the bases, in the field, at the plate, and they don't do it on the mound. And I think when you have some talent and you play pretty clean baseball, you're going to win more often than not.
We were kind of having a hypothetical conversation about whether we'd take the Mariners. Now, these three teams obviously won't all be playing each other, but of the three wildcard teams right now, whether we would take the Mariners over the two as the other two as the best team. And it was interesting because you could see the strengths, obviously, for either squad and the weaknesses for either of these wildcard teams. Right now, would you say that the Mariners stacking up against the other two wildcard teams are the best of the bunch, or do they have a little more to work on?
No, I think the Mariners have the most talent. I think they're probably the best. I mean, their bullpen is the best of the group. And that's saying something because, like, you know, the Blue Jays have Jordan Romano, who's one of the best closers in baseball. And the Rays, you know, they always have guys. You don't know any of their names. And they all throw weirdly. But they have a good – but I think the Mariners, like, and then you look at their starting staff. I mean, you know, the Blue Jays have Alek Manoah, but he's not as good as Luis Castillo. The Rays have Shane McClanahan, but he's hurt. I think pitching-wise, they stack up. And then, you know, Toronto probably has the better offensive team. Tampa doesn't. But I like, if you put all the pieces together, I would take the Mariners first, probably Blue Jays close second, and then the Rays third. And yet, the Rays have had more success than either two teams, doing it with a lot of no-name guys that we've never heard of before and piecing it together with the way they play.
We had this conversation yesterday, Ryan, about what to do with Winker and Santana in that DH spot. You know, we talked about my opinion was, okay, well, Winker's going to get on base, right? You have a team that relies on a home run. Go with the guy who's going to get on base, maybe gets knocked in. And then yesterday, Santana shows up and goes yard. And then it just, like, makes it – it confuses me even more. If you were the GM in that situation, how would you handle the Winker, Santana, and DH spot?
Yeah, I mean, like – I mean, it's not like you can really just send Winker to the glue factory or, you know, give him the old Yeller treatment. He's on the team. You can't cut him. You can't option him. But he really, right now, to me, brings very little to helping you win. He is quite possibly one of the worst outfielders in all of baseball. And, you know, it's not getting better. It's only getting worse. He's not a plus base runner. And right now, he's kind of a, you know, it's walk or nothing for him. Yeah, he might get a single, but he's not driving the ball anywhere, you know. And what are the values of walks? You know, that's another thing. Yeah, it's great to get a walk and get your on-base percentage up, but there's walks that are valued more, like at tough moments in the game when you really need a base runner, is he getting a walk? And in big rallies, is he part of a big rally? Is he a reason why he's on base? I don't know. I haven't looked completely. The narrative tells you probably not as much as you think. And realistically, you know, Sam Haggerty is better than him as an outfielder, a base runner, and right now as a hitter. You know, so, and when Mitch is back, obviously he's going to be in right field. I would go with, I mean, like, Carlos Santana is going to give you good at bat. He's not going to strike out a bunch. He's going to hit the ball hard. If you look at all the StatCast data of who's hitting the ball hard more consistently, it's Santana. You know, like Larry Stone asked, would you keep Jesse Winker on the postseason roster given his defensive liabilities, given who you might face in a series? Would, like, somebody like Dylan Moore and even Abraham Toro have more value to you because of their versatility than Jesse, who can only DH really because they're not going to play him in the outfield in a postseason game? I just can't see that happening.
How is Dylan Moore, by the way?
It was funny. A scout had told me, he said, there, he goes, yeah, I read somewhere where he barely started baseball activities. And yesterday I'm watching him swing at 100%, and run the bases and do everything. I said, yeah, well, I took a few days off. Sorry. But, like, he's back to, you know, 100%, I think. I'm surprised they're not going to send him to Tacoma for a couple of rehab games. But they're facing some left-handed pitching in Anaheim, so I guess they're hoping that they can activate him here in the next day or two and use him in Anaheim just to have, especially if Mitch isn't back. Though I talked to Mitch yesterday after the game, and he seemed pretty confident that he'd be activated by tomorrow or by Saturday. Mm-hmm. So, I think we'll see Dylan Moore on this be activated here on the upcoming road trip.
What do you think the future is for Haggerty on this team? He continues just to make plays. I don't see too many players like Haggerty, man. How do you think he fits in for the future of this club?
Yeah, I mean, he definitely has found a home here. And how they use him, I think they've optimized his success. It's crazy. He's like the backup quarterback, though. Everybody loves the backup quarterback. And dude, like, you know, he's got the floppy hair and the headbands. He looks 12 years old. Like, my mom loves Sam Haggerty. Grandmas love Sam Haggerty. Why isn't Sam Haggerty playing anymore? He should be playing all the time. He should be batting leadoff. I think, you know, ultimately, Sam, his best, he hits way much better from the right side than the left side. His versatility, I mean, he'll be a utility player on this team next year. I don't know that he's going to be a starter for all the reasons he's never been a starter before. You know, the Mariners have tried to force that at second base sometimes with, like, Dylan Moore in the past and Shed Long and guys, and it just didn't work. I think, you know, unless he plays his way into it, and he's not a great defensive second baseman, he's a pretty solid one, but you can go out and get a guy in the offseason to play second base that's an everyday guy and still have Sam Haggerty to use all the time. I mean, the one thing is like when you bring him in late in the game as a pinch runner, and we're going to see that in the postseason, he creates all kinds of havoc and he really puts pressure on the opposing pitcher. And it's such a great weapon to have, is to have that guy be able to run the bases and steal bases and get you extra 90 feet in games that are close. So, you know, I don't know that he's an everyday player next year. Maybe he could prove me wrong, but right now, you know, he has a good role where he plays a lot without being an everyday spot.
Well, speaking of leadoff, Julio joins the 25-25 club in that win over the Padres. Obviously a fantastic season for him, a historic season for him. And I'm borrowing a story from Bump here, who talked about speaking with a friend of his, and Bump said something like, you know, not even Ken Griffey did that, and Ken Griffey Jr. did that, and the friend was so offended. How dare you, you know, mention Griffey? Griffey's done so much. And Ryan, I'm curious to hear your opinion. Having covered so many players for this team and covering them so regularly, most especially Julio of late, you see this up close. Do you agree? It's almost like he needs his own separate story here. There's so much comparisons to the young phenom who was here and debuted back in 89. But the things he's doing are special enough to deserve its own separate attention.
Yeah, I mean, like, Griffey doesn't like the comparison. I mean, like, the numbers are frighteningly similar, and Julio's might be even a little better. Griffey doesn't like the comparison. And to be honest, I don't think Julio likes the comparison. I mean, Julio's a child of this generation. He likes being himself. He's always been himself. And so it's not necessarily fair. And I think given his personality and given how open he is and just how communicative he is with the fans and interacts with them, I don't think you need to compare it to him. I mean, I was an eighth grader when, God, this makes me sound old. I was an eighth grader or seventh when Griffey was a rookie, and I remember he made baseball cool again. Like, you know, I love baseball. I mean, it was my whole life, but, like, Griffey made baseball cool in a way that had never been cool before. Like, how NBA players, you know, he was like Jordan. He made it cool. And Julio has that effect. Like, if you look at these games now and you go to these games, the biggest draw for Major League Baseball is getting 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old kids to be interested in this game, teenagers who hate everything and only like themselves to be interested. Like, Julio is doing that. Like, you look in the stands and see the number of kids wearing Julio shirts. And, like, even my little nieces that live in Denver, Colorado, they know who Julio is. You know, I have, you know, my girlfriend's kids, they have Julio shirts. Like, this is important to them. You know, and he is that guy. He is what kids gravitate towards. And it's not just big for the Mariners or the Seattle area. It's big for baseball because you need that guy because, like, Mike Trout really isn't that guy. Mm-hmm. They don't identify with, like, Julio does TikToks. Kids understand what Julio does because they're not that far apart in age, which is insane as well. He's 21 years old. So, you know, he's not far apart in age from these kids. So he likes the same things. He understands the way they think, and that's why people are gravitating towards him.
Why do you think neither of them maybe particularly like the comparison?
I just think it's their, you know, kind of who they are. I think with Ken, with Griffey, he just, it's never simple with Junior. I mean, I've known him and covered him and for a long time. It's never simple, and he never wants the easy way to think. Like, I think for a lot of reasons, it's just an easy comparison. They play center field, you know, same team, all this stuff. The smile, you know, it's an easy comparison. But there are a lot of differences and a lot of layers to it, you know, as well. And I think that's what, like, for Julio, he was a great prospect coming out of the DR at 16. But he wasn't envisioned to be where he's at now. You know, like, Griffey was this phenom of talent that was just superb and, you know, everything was easy and everything, you know, he just had a natural gift for the game. And don't get me wrong, Griffey worked at it a ton. But he just had a natural grace to the game and how he played. Julio is a lot more self-made in the sense that, like, you know, he was kind of chubby when he was coming up and thicker. And he trimmed himself down. And he wanted to be a center fielder when everybody profiled him as a swing and miss right fielder with power. He's become a better hitter. He can run. He did all these things. So he wants, you know, give him credit for that. By comparing him to Griffey, it's almost like, well, he gets no credit for all the work he's done to get himself to this point.
All right. He is Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times. You guys, I swear every time he joins our airwaves, whether it's with Wyman and Bob, whether it's with us, I learn something new. And I also learn something new every time I read his columns. And you should be doing that regularly at seattletimes.com/sports. Check out Ryan's work covering this team as they, fingers crossed, knock on wood, are about to hit the postseason. And coverage is going to get really, really fascinating. Ryan, thanks so much for taking the time.
Yeah, you guys have a good day.
Thanks, Ryan.
That's the last time I gas Ryan up. That's it. Everything else after that. That's it. That's all he gets. That's max. Max.
Why?
Because I don't gas anyone up. In fact, you should do better with Four Down Territory right here. Let's get to it.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with former Seahawks and Coug wide receiver Michael Bumpus.
First down, Bump. What do you want to see from the Seahawks offense against the Niners?
Well, I want to see Rashad Penny get more touches. I want to see Ken Walker get more touches. But I especially want to see them still be aggressive in the second half. I heard KJ talk about this on his show Wednesday, 8 to 9 on this program, the KJ Wright Show. And he said that he felt like Geno Smith just tightened up just a little bit in that second half. And I can understand that, and I can see that. Because when you have the lead, you're like, oh, man, we got the lead. It's the second half, man. We got what? They went in 17-10 at halftime, I believe it was. And he's trying to protect that lead. But it's almost like we need you to be the same guy you were in the first quarter, first half. If you can put up another 17 points, let's put up another 17 points. So it's finding a way to still be calculated with your play calling and with your moves, but be the same guy you were in the first half. Now let's see if he can start the first half against the 49ers the same way now that the 49ers have tape on them. But offensively, I just want to see them continue to move the ball, push it down the field a little bit. Don't need to throw any bombs or anything like that too consistently, but just be the same team that got you that 17 points.
Second down. All right, what did the Niners do very well that will test the Seahawks defense?
We talked about their run game. You're going to see every single run in the book, but also this is what they do. What you see is not what you get when that offense comes out there. They're going to come out in a formation. There's going to be a motion. There's going to be a shift. There's going to be a play fake. There's going to be a boot. Like, it's never straight up with the 49ers. So what does that mean for the defense, man? You have to be disciplined. If you got outside contain, you got outside contain. If your job is an A-gap, you just stuff the A-gap and do your job. If safeties, if you are in a quarters cover, you're over the top, stay over the top, because what the Niners like to do is deceive you, make you think you see something, make you communicate too. I don't know how loud it gets. It's Levi Stadium, the Niners playing now. I don't know how loud it gets over there, but you guys have to communicate. There's going to be shifts. There's going to be motions. They're going to go on two. There's going to be read options. There's going to be play fakes. I mean, you're going to see a lot of stuff. So this defense has to be really disciplined and read your keys, and they should be in the game.
Third down. What are you most excited to see tonight, as a reminder, on Amazon Prime exclusively, when the Chargers take on the Chiefs for Thursday Night Football?
Man, I'm looking at the quarterback matchup. Justin Herbert had a great year last year, right? One of the top three quarterbacks in the league when you look at his stats. Now it's like, okay, can you back it up? And can you do it against a guy who's been crowned the next best thing in the NFL? Last week, Pat Mahomes goes 30 of 39, 365 touchdowns. Justin Herbert goes 26 of 34, 279, three touchdowns. Also with Justin Herbert, Keenan Allen's not going to be out there. So now you're going to have to pin on Mike Williams in that run game with Edgar. I just want to see how Justin Herbert steps up in prime time. You know, coming out of Oregon, I didn't expect much out of him.
Nor did I.
I knew he was a good football player. He wasn't garbage, but he went to the Rose Bowl. I don't know if they won or not. I can't remember. But went to the Rose Bowl, but I wasn't expecting much. So to see him have the progression that he's had in his career, it's exciting to see. I just want to see now, can you do it against Pat Mahomes and them boys, man? Because there's a different type of pressure that comes to the game when you're playing against the Chiefs.
Yeah, Justin Herbert, a little bit like Patrick Mahomes in that sense, where you're a first-round pick. There are plenty of people that think that you have the potential to be a franchise star, but no one's, like, banking on it in the way they were with other quarterbacks. Like, for instance, with Baker Mayfield, everyone's talking about Baker Mayfield, and he's getting all the attention now. I don't know how many people are banking on him being a star the way that people saw Trevor Lawrence, number one pick for Jacksonville, as being the surest thing since Peyton Manning or Andrew Luck coming out. So if you're claiming, I saw all of this coming with Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert, congratulations, I guess. but it's okay to admit that even then they surprised you just a little bit. Going to be a fantastic day of offense here tonight. I'm very excited to watch. Fourth down. All right, this one might be obvious, but what situation do the Hawks need to get the Niners into and why?
Okay, it's super obvious. You want
losing?
Yeah, that too.
Okay.
But you want offenses to get in third and long, right? The teams you're going up against. Everyone's like, oh, yeah, that's obvious, Bump. That's what you want. But it's really important to the 49ers to get them into third and long, because this offense is not built for third and long. I just talked about what they do great. They're great with the pass game. You watch the game against the Chicago Bears. Trey Lance has a couple footballs thrown down the field, but typically he's looking for the underneath stuff. they're not really explosive in the pass game right now. They had a 3rd-and-7, didn't convert. 3rd-and-13, they converted that. 3rd-and-7, no. 3rd-and-6, no. 3rd-and-9, no. 3rd-and-10, they converted. 3rd-and-5, interception. 3rd-and-8, didn't convert. You get this team in 3rd-and-long, you're going to have some success because they're not built for this. Now, I understand it was raining with the Chicago Bears. I get it. But I just look at how Kyle Shanahan calls football games and what Trey Lance brings to the table. I don't think Kyle is comfortable right now having going empty sets and letting Trey Lance just throw it all over the field. No, he wants to deceive you. So I think that if the Hawks can continuously get these guys in 3rd-and-longs, this defense is going to have a great opportunity for, one, to stop him, and two, have Trey Lance try to force some things, make some plays, get an interception. We ain't seen one yet.
I'm going to ask you a question no one has the answer to. Okay. But I just want to hear your opinion on maybe a conspiracy theory type of what you think happened. Do you think that the 49ers knew they were taking on a big project with Trey Lance and knew that it would take them a long time to come around, develop, but just really, really love what he brings? Or do you think that they were higher on him and then have since had doubts and questions?
No, I think they knew it was going to be a process. But I think Kyle Shanahan looked at how he calls plays and what his offenses typically do and says, all right, I just need 3 plays from this guy a game. Like, he has the talent to make those plays, and I'm going to pacify him by having a Deebo, having a George Kittle, Elijah Mitchell. He's banged up with a sprained knee, I think his injury is. He's not going to be here. But having these guys around him to work, because what's the 49ers offense? Get the ball into your guys' hands quickly and let them run. Let them do their thing. That's kind of what the Seahawks are trying to do, but I think their situation is a bit different. They have more deep play guys on the outside. So, no, I think they understood what they were getting into, but I think that Kyle Shanahan and his ego, which he should have one, said, look, I can make this kid into something. I still think they should have went with Justin Fields, though.
You take Justin Fields over Trey Lance
all day.
Why?
He's played in big games. No disrespect to North Dakota.
No, I would like to disrespect North Dakota State.
Okay, you disrespect
my
own.
Disrespect. That's who my Wildcats play this weekend.
Enemy of the show, North Dakota State.
But Ohio State?
I mean,
that's different. Yeah.
He's played in a lot of big games.
Other hand, Ohio State, lots of great receivers, lots of great offensive linemen. Sure. I mean, you're playing with more 5-star players.
Yeah, you are. And North Dakota, they're playing against lesser football players.
I mean, we all know.
You know?
Now both the Dakotas are going to be heated.
Heated.
All right, coming up in the timeline, another all-time legend retires. Plus, congratulations to the Angels on a pretty bad accomplishment.
This is The Timeline
with Bump and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
Bump and Stacey bringing you the top stories you're going to see on your own timeline. As a reminder for you guys, we are a short show today. Technically, the huddle starts at noon, so 2 hours of a Seahawks preview. Dave Wyman going to join us. We're going to have player guests Tariq Woolen and Phil Haynes both going to join us. You guys are going to hear from Geno Smith at the podium. We'll also have Steve Rabel, Ray Roberts, all kinds of good stuff. So before we get to any of it, we've got the timeline, then we're going to wrap up with Hype Train. So two fun segments here. Let's get it started with college football. ESPN and the Pac-12 are reportedly hundreds of millions of dollars apart on a new deal. That according to Andrew Marchand of the New York Post. Now, Andrew says that he can, it doesn't mean that the two sides won't reach an agreement. It doesn't mean that ESPN can't have a partnership with the Pac-12. It just means that right now the Pac-12 and ESPN are pretty far apart on anything happening. Oh, and he says that's in part because, look, the Pac-12 and the Big 12 as well don't have as much leverage. So I'm curious to...
Hold on. $100 million apart?
He said hundreds of millions of dollars apart.
So not just 100.
Yeah, not 100. Hundreds, plural, of millions.
So they ain't nowhere. They're nowhere.
What we're hearing is they aren't close. One is on Saturn, and the other one is on Earth.
You know, that's why it's so important that us Pac-12 teams root for each other. Like, this weekend, I'm going hard for UW. We need them to beat Michigan State, right? That's why when Oregon State beat Fresno State, for sure, let's get it. You know what I'm saying? UCLA has had a soft non-conference so far. But
well, we don't like UCLA or USC anymore.
Facts. But
First of all, we don't ride for them anymore.
As of right now, it's still good for the conference, right? So you need these teams to do well against these non-conference so you become more attractive. And you need USC to do well and hopefully get into the playoff. Like, this is the first time where you can legit not necessarily root for another team, but support them at times because – it's better for the pack.
Tell me what you guys think about this. Andrew Marchand adds that while he hasn't heard any definitive reports about this happening or doesn't have sources saying this will happen, he's just via conjecture wondering whether or not a streaming service will get involved with the Pac-12, whether there could be a digital partnership there. He says Apple TV could be something he could see happening just based on Apple's business model, buying up all these things and then selling subscriptions. They did the same with MLS, and he wonders whether they might be there for Pac-12.
Just do something.
Honestly, it would be easier to watch Pac-12 games with an Apple TV Plus subscription.
Or YouTube.
Than it would. Yes.
Something.
Yeah.
I work for the Pac-12, and it's hard for me to watch the games. I have to go through an app. It has to connect to my cable. Like, there's so many things I have to do just to watch it. So, yeah, the easier it is, the better it's going to be for the Pac-12. Man, you want eyes on these athletes.
All right, next up in the timeline, congratulations to the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, who have clinched their seventh consecutive losing season, the longest active streak in baseball. Now, Angels fans, I can hear you all the way from Anaheim saying, you guys haven't made the playoffs in two decades. I can't believe you're... It doesn't matter because we haven't had here in Seattle Mike Trout or Shohei Ohtani. You haven't had a winning record for seven seasons now in a row.
Yeah, and guess what? We get a guy. And we're going to the playoffs.
At least we fail creatively here. You know what I mean? You had a $100 million payroll. You had a horrible payroll. You had superstars. You had scandals. Seattle's just found new and fun ways to fail. And I think that that's something.
Yeah, that is something.
Yeah.
But
the Angels are out here just failing with two
failing
MVPs.
Failing with some ballers, though. Some straight ballers.
No pitchers, two MVPs. So, yeah, tough stuff for the Angels there. All right, next up in the timeline, another legend has retired. Roger Federer, 20-time Grand Slam champion, announced his retirement this morning, this following a series of knee surgeries. He said, basically, look, my body tells me when I'm ready to step away, and that's what it's telling me right now. I'm paraphrasing his statement. It was a very long, very touching statement, an emotional tribute that he issued via his social media accounts this morning. But 20-time Grand Slam champion Roger Federer officially retiring.
Man, that's crazy because, like, my tennis memories are like of 8 to 10 tennis players, right? There's Andy Roddick, there's Federer, there's Nadal, there's Venus, there's Serena, Kournikova, Sharapova. Like, you're starting to see all these athletes kind of retire, man. But he has to be celebrated. One of the greatest tennis players of all time. I remember, you know what I remember most about this dude? Obviously him winning, but right. He had like a Rolex commercial or something like that. He did watches, and I'm like, man, I can't afford that watch, but he makes it look so nice on the wrist right there. But
it's weird the random memories we have of
random
athletes. It's either the first time an athlete was introduced to you, like what sticks out in your mind, or just what you also associate with them.
Yeah.
Like for, is it Anna Kournikova or Maria Sharapova?
Who's Kournikova the one that dated
Enrique Iglesias?
That's Anna Kournikova. Yeah.
Kournikova, I always associate. Despite all of her accomplishments, there's also, I'm like, oh, and the Enrique video.
And she didn't have a great career, but she had a good career. But, yeah, man, to see Federer go out, I mean, and a smooth tennis player, wasn't, like, extremely athletic. He never did some things. You're like, how did he do that? You know what I'm saying? Just a real smooth tennis player. And he seemed like a nice dude. You know, obviously, I didn't know the guy. But every time
you don't know Roger
Federer? Nah, you know, I mean, passed by him a couple times. You know what I'm saying?
When Bump was talking about this friend he has who's a little older than him, he meant Roger Federer.
I mean, Roger. We're sitting there having beer at a bar one day.
And he's talking about, how dare you compare Julio to Ken Griffey Jr.? They're so different.
Exactly. It was Roger.
Yeah. Huge Mariners fan, by the way, Roger Federer. You heard it here first, folks. All right, next up in the timeline, CAA has terminated their relationship with Guardians pitcher Zach Plesac. If you guys remember, Zach Plesac is the pitcher who was on the mound in a loss against the Mariners where, was it Jake Lamb hitting a home run?
It was.
And Zach Plesac punches the mound in anger, ended up fracturing his hand and then missing his next start also against the Mariners. In 2020, he violated MLB's COVID protocol. In 2021, injured himself taking his shirt off aggressively. Who among us? And then obviously in 2022, you guys know the story I just told you about punching his fist into the mound. Are you still laughing at the idea of hurting yourself, injuring yourself, taking your shirt off too aggressively?
My guy's a loose cannon with too many buttons on that shirt.
I'm just imagining being so mad and then you get it stuck above your head and you're like, but you know when you're just so mad, but you're like, God, my seatbelt is stuck on me. I can't, you know, like it's, I would imagine it's kind of like that.
You know what gets me? Every time. It's only happened to me like 4 or 5 times. Like if I walk by
It's only happened to me 4 or 5
in my whole
times.
Life. I'm 36 years old, right? you walk by something and it gets stuck in your pocket or your loop and you just get snagged.
Yeah.
That really gets me
Let
going.
Me tell you what I've done a lot of in radio is getting up and walking away with headphones on or having headphones get caught on something and then they hit my face. That happens too. Curtis has seen that happen in real time.
Well, I think Zach can relate because he's been through some stuff.
Me and Zach injure ourselves a lot accidentally in very mundane ways.
But like the fact that his agency was like, you know what? You're too much of a loose cannon for us to represent you.
They were like, you know, we're good. It's been enough for us. So
too much of a risk.
I can't get over. I know that the other two are comparatively more serious, violating MLB protocol and then also breaking your hand. But there's something about injuring yourself, taking off your shirt. What's the dumbest injury you've ever had?
Dumbest injury I've ever had? You know, I don't have really dumb ones.
I know Curtis's.
Stubbing my toe on something.
I've shared
it
a few times.
Yeah, Curtis broke his ankle walking across the street.
I didn't break my ankle, but it was an ankle injury. It was.
Well, what'd you do to it? You had to have surgery.
I tore my Achilles slightly crossing the street.
It's almost worse. I tore my Achilles crossing the street.
He saw the numbers counting down, you know, on the crosswalk.
He had a little bit of like a non-contact injury.
Uh-oh. And then pop, and it was like, oh no, this is not good.
A little too quick off the jump. My sister did break her ankle taking the trash out.
Wow.
Yeah.
Curtis, did you make it to the other side of the street?
I did, yeah.
Were you dragging your leg behind you?
No, but I was definitely limping the last third of the way across the street. And then once I crossed the street, I had to gather myself and I was like, whoa, that is a pain I have never felt in my life.
Wow. It's wild that there are athletes who rupture their Achilles or tear an ACL and then they just kind of walk off the field. Like, I still think of Richard Sherman walking off the field with the Arizona Cardinals, and you're like, how? And he stayed on the sideline just walking around. You're like, your tendon isn't connected to your foot. I don't know how
Kobe,
this is
his
happening.
Achilles, he walks off, comes back on, shoots some free throws, and walks off again.
You can't think of a dumb injury?
I can't. Dumbest one I had was in practice. Routes on air.
You know what?
Absolutely nothing.
That's a great answer.
Routes on air.
Yep. I was just running and I broke my foot.
Running a speed out. Yep. Bop. Yep. Broke it.
All right. It's Bump and Stacey. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app. We are wrapping things up with Hype Train coming your way next.
Bump and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Michael Bumpus and Stacey Rost.
All right, we are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. No Mariners tonight, but there's another late night edition of Extra Innings with Curtis Rogers, normally 7 to 9. Today it is from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. right here on Seattle Sports Station. And that's Around the Diamond, brought to you by the Shane Company. Wrapping things up with Hype Train before I get to that, we were talking about really unlucky injuries or stupid injuries. And we had a couple people texting into the Mac and Jack's text line about them. I want to read you guys too. Number one, just started a new job last week, sprained my MCL tripping over rebar. Now I'm stuck in an office doing mindless filing for 2 weeks. That's unfortunate.
Dang. Knees up.
I know. They said, at least I have Bump and Stacy to listen to. And I'm not making that up. They really said that. This one from the 509, I'm a baseball umpire. I had a pitcher get aggravated on a ball strike call and didn't see the catcher's return throw coming to him. And the ball hit him in the face and knocked out his two front teeth. The two front teeth were laying on the mound by his feet. So I'm imagining it's like he turns to the ump to complain, but then the catcher has stood up to throw it back and he hits him right in the face. Is that what happened?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Goodness. Have you guys ever lost a tooth in a bad way, like a permanent tooth?
No, never. No.
No.
I had my kid lose a tooth, but he was young, so he was coming back. It was growing back. We were playing in the hallway in my house, and he's running towards me, like trying to tag me, and I'm like moving out the way.
You knocked your kid's tooth out?
No. So then he's running towards me, and I like jump over him, and he keeps running and smacks
you
the wall.
You hurdled your kid.
And he smacks the wall. Boom! Tooth is out. Wifey's mad. Of course it's my fault.
Is it Andrew Hawkins who has the commercials or the videos of playing football with his kids, but he's like actually tackling them, pushing them down? That's how I imagine it. All right, let's get to Hype Train here, wrapping up the show with our final segment of Bump and Stacey before we get to the huddle. Curtis, take us to the station. All right, hype train number one. By the way, here's how it works. I read you guys a trend, a prediction in the world of sports today. And if you're buying into it, you're boarding the train. You have to tell me why. If you're not buying it, you think it's nothing but hype, you are not believing this for a second, you also have to tell me why, but you're not boarding the train. So here we go. Josh Jones, a safety now starting in place of Jamal Adams, who is reportedly done for the season, will finish the year with more interceptions than Adams had in 2021. If you're wondering, that number is two.
Two. Josh Jones. He's going to get an opportunity.
He's got 16 games, assuming he remains a starter and remains healthy.
You know what? Let's take a peek at Josh Jones. You know what? I'm going to say yes. You know why? Because he almost had an interception during preseason. So that tells me that he knows how to be at the right place at the right time. And because he's not Jamal Adams, I don't think they're going to use him consistently the same way they were going to use Jamal Adams this year, which is in the box, causing havoc, in the flats, in the curl. No, I think he'll be on the back end most of the time, and there will be opportunities for him to go get it. I'm going yes. I'm on this train.
All right, the hype train is that Josh Jones, now a starting safety in place of Jamal Adams, who's done for the season, reportedly, will finish the year with more interceptions than Adams had in 2021. Again, that number is two. Bump is boarding. Curtis, are you?
More would mean three.
That is correct.
As my math skills have deducted here. I am going to say...
That's what they teach you at Arizona.
Exactly. Didn't have to write an entrance essay, by the way, to get into U of A. Just a little fun fact about how easy it was to get in.
Just have to double click?
No, yeah, you just had to just say you'd be willing to go to Arizona.
Pretty much. Josh Jones will not exceed Jamal Adams' interception total. I think he matches it, so I will not board this train.
Saying he matches it is still a bold take, given that we haven't seen a ton from him. Certainly not with the Seahawks being in his first game. You know what? For fun, I'm going to say yes, because I think it's going to get tested a lot. I think a lot of quarterbacks are going to see a rookie corner and a backup in at safety behind Jamal Adams, and they're going to assume
there's
this huge
talent. I don't want you for fun. I want you for real.
That is my for real, but my for real is also based on just kind of like winging it and being like, I think people are just going to take more shots.
Okay.
It's the same reason I think that Tariq Woolen has a chance to finish with a couple picks. Yep. Is people are going to take chances, and he's going to have the opportunities. Can he live up to it and make quarterbacks pay for underestimating him? We'll see.
Do it.
All right, next type train here. We're all boarding that one.
Curtis is
boarding. Oh, Curtis said no, but Curtis said he's getting two. So Curtis still had like
kinda
a positive hype train.
Okay.
He was like, I'm not getting on the hype train for 3+, but I'll get on the...
I'm making my
I'll
own
like wave
train.
At you guys.
Okay.
Yeah. He's got his own just two interception train. All right, sticking with the Seahawks here. Congratulations to Uchenna Nwosu for being named NFC Defensive Player of the Week after his performance against the Denver Broncos. This is the hype train. Tell me if you're boarding. Another Seahawks player will win NFC Defensive Player of the Week before October 15th, let's say, but in the next month.
In the next month, okay, they play the Niners, the Falcons, the Lions, not the
Lions.
Tigers.
Every team from Detroit is the Lions. MLB. We've established that.
I'm going to say yeah, and I think it's going to be Derrick Taylor specifically, because he is going to figure it out. He has so much energy, so much skill, a great motor. I think that first game he was so amped up that he missed a couple of plays, but he was in position to make several. So I think it's going to happen, and it's going to be number 52.
All right, Curtis, the hype train is that another Seahawks player will win NFC Defensive Player of the Week before the next month. Not before the month is over. I'm giving you until mid-October.
Until mid-October, I think the only game I look at where there is a possibility of that, I was going to say certainty, would be the Falcons game week 3 when they come to Seattle. And I think Quandre Diggs picks off Marcus Mariota not just once, but twice in that game.
Ooh.
I think that he wins Defensive Player of the Week. So I will board this train.
All right, I like that one. I'm going to go ahead and, you know what? I'll say yes, too. We'll make it a very... High on defense today. Last hype train here into the station. We'll be really quick. Dave Wyman will figure out how to watch tonight's Thursday Night Football game on Amazon Prime without assistance. Are you boarding that train?
I'm not on that train, man.
What?
I'm not. I love my guy. Dave Wyman is one of my favorite people in the whole wide world. But I know him too well. I've known this guy for, 5-6 seasons now. And,
you don't believe in him?
He struggles. He struggles to get his parking passes to get into the stadium.
The digital one?
The digital one.
With the email you?
Yes, he struggles with that. So just because he struggles with that, I'm going to say there's going to be a group text where he's
haters.
Like, this freaking Amazon deal, what's going on? It's going down.
I hate that he's going to look on Apple TV. Curtis, the hype train is that Dave Wyman will figure out how to watch tonight's Thursday Night Football game on Amazon Prime without assistance. Bump is not boarding. Are you boarding?
I have never been more confident in not boarding a train in my entire life.
Oh,
he'll have to ask his honorary son, Mike Lefko, in how he can access this game. So I do not see Dave Wyman, unfortunately, able to access this game on his own.
A beautiful father-son relationship the two of them have. Both have also just such a love of jelly beans. They eat them together and just talk about the flavors. It's adorable. I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say that he has done this just enough times to be able to piece it together himself. Dave, do not let me down. Not let me down. We'll be able to ask him what he thinks, because Dave Wyman joins us next for a two-hour Seahawks show. We'll be joined by a couple players, a couple of your favorite voices covering this team. So do not go anywhere. The Huddle's coming your way next.